Welcome to the Self-Love Lifestyle Podcast. I am your host, Melanie Monaco, and I am so honored to be connecting with you today through these sound waves. I'm a master self-love coach. I train and certify self-love coaches. I hold numerous certifications and practices like archetypal psychology, energy healing, intuitive eating, and more. But most importantly, I am on a mission to guide others in manifesting more self-love. Self-love empowers us with the tools to not only love and accept ourselves deeply, but to expand our compassion for those around us. Practicing self-love means alchemizing life's challenges by transmuting pain into purpose and viewing obstacles as opportunities for deepening self-awareness and understanding. In this podcast, I'll be sharing inspiration for your own healing journey, guided rituals, spiritual insight, as well as candid conversations with the amazing goddesses on my team and other leaders in the wellness space as well. My hope is that at the end of each episode, you feel empowered, inspired, and more connected to your most authentic self. Self-love may be a personal journey, but it is not a journey that we have to do alone. I am infinitely grateful for our amazing community, and by listening, you are now part of our community too. Thank you for being here. Now let's dive in. Hello. I wanted to pop in before I play the episode because we're talking about my birth experience and pregnancy in this episode. So if there is anything tender for you around birth, pregnancy, around bodily consent not being honored, I really invite you to become very self-aware about how this episode is sitting with you as you're listening to it. And if it ever feels like too much, please allow yourself some space. It can be so healing to listen to other people's stories and processing various traumas and experiences. And if that is you, I really hope that hearing my experience helps you feel less alone. But if you're in a space where it's not aligned, that's fine. I just trust that you will trust your own heart as you move forward in this episode. Another thing is that I was recording in my office and I didn't realize there was as much of a sound bleed because I haven't recorded in a while. So you might hear a couple of noises that we've had some work getting done on our house. So I apologize in advance if you can hear anything or hear a baby cry. I'm going to figure out how to record in a more professional way moving forward. But I just wanted to, invite some grace as I am finding my footing again in the podcast world. Thank you so much, and I hope you enjoy. Hello. Welcome back to the Self-Love Lifestyle Podcast. It's been a while. I just looked at my last podcast episode, and it happened to be the day before I conceived my baby. And that makes a lot of sense because so much has happened since that point in time. Obviously, I went through pregnancy and birth, became a mother, and in just a matter of weeks, my little one is going to be 1 year old. So it's been over a year and a half since my last podcast episode. And my attention has turned elsewhere. But I love that synchronicity of the day of my last episode being the day before I conceived Leo, because I wanted to record this podcast to talk about my transition into motherhood. It's something I've been sharing bits and pieces of on Instagram with the community there and on Facebook a little bit. But it's not something that I've fully given a lot of space for because I've been in the midst of processing all of it. Very simply put, motherhood has been the largest, most overwhelming shadow work initiation of my life. And what I mean by that is shadow work is often used as a term in healing as a way of accessing these parts of ourselves that are often hidden, that are in our subconscious that we may not be aware of. The shadow is the part of us that we don't want to see or can't see. Often it's the part of us that we hid away as young people, as children, in order to conform to standards put upon us by our caretakers, society, peers. And through the course of our growing and getting older, often we have this part of ourselves that we want to present to the world. And then we have the part of ourselves that we keep hidden because we feel shame or like there's no space for it. The way that this manifests with shadow is often we see this shadow reflected in other people. And when we see other people and we're like, oh, that really just rubs me the wrong way. Like, I don't know why, but I just don't like that person. Often it's because we actually see a part of ourselves in them, and it's the part of ourselves that we aren't loving. So a huge practice of self-love needs to be shadow work, because you can't just love one part of yourself and call it self-love. We have to learn how to love our whole selves, even the parts of ourselves that carry shame, that feel dark, that feel like that skeleton in the closet that we don't want other people to see. When we can learn how to love those parts of ourselves, we are able to bring ourselves into a place of wholeness and authenticity. And the shadow can come out in all of these different ways, like lashing out at other people, or, you know, feeling like an overwhelming sense of people pleasing, or, you know, like we can't go after what we want in life. Like this fear of judgment from others definitely stems from that shadow. This fear of incapability of ourselves, like, oh, I can't do it. I couldn't possibly follow forward on that path to that dream because I'm not capable. You know, those kinds of things, those come from the shadows. And so whether we're conscious of it or not, the shadow can hold us back. And propel us forward into self-destructive behavior without us being aware of it. And it can affect every single action of every single day. And so when we're able to tap into self-awareness of the shadow, and then even go deeper than that to self-love of the shadow, it makes moving forward and creating the life that we want to have so much easier and attainable. And it's not easy work to do the shadow work. And if we don't do it, then there will be experiences where it will come up and we have to face it in order to move forward in our evolution, which is why I say motherhood and becoming a mother has been the greatest shadow work initiation of my life, because it really is an initiation into these darker parts of myself that I thought I had healed, that I didn't even know were there, that have shown me this weight of really, for me, it's shame that I carry, and responsibility and codependency and all of these different issues in relationship with myself and others, and also just my expectations with myself. And I see the value of it. You know, I think in my processing of this experience and transition into motherhood, I see, of course, like the challenges I'm being presented with. I experience the doubt and the emotional upheaval and the like literal capital T trauma. I was diagnosed with PTSD. And also I see the value of moving through that experience, and I see the beauty and magic of going into my inner underworld and being transformed and coming out as a more authentic version of myself. I mean, that is literally the, like, we talk about this in my certification course, and if you've known me for a long time, you know this is my favorite myth. I love the myth of Persephone. She's the goddess of spring and also queen of the underworld, wife to Hades, the god of the underworld. It's a Greek myth that then also is a Roman myth. But we see this reflected in various cultures, this idea of transformation through darkness. And I've always felt aligned with that, that myth. And my transition into motherhood is definitely following that heroine's journey. So I want to talk today about my pregnancy, and I think the biggest part will be talking about my birth experience, bringing my son Aurelio Sol into the world, and a little bit about motherhood. And, you know, I don't want to like spend hours on here. I actually can't spend hours on here. I am a mom, and I do have a business to run, but I just did a practice that was suggested to me by my amazing therapist, whose name is also a Greek goddess name. Her name's Athena. And she's a therapist and also a midwife. She was not my midwife. She lives on another continent entirely. But I found her in processing my birth experience. And she's been an amazing resource. And one of the things that she just suggested to me recently was doing a, for lack of a better word, ritual, where you go through and you chart out an experience, and for every moment of beauty, or like, I guess, quote, positive moment, you put down a flower, and then for every moment that's like, quote, negative or challenging moment, you put down a stone. And so I'm going to share this on my Instagram, so you'll be able to see the visual representation of what I mean. But I'm looking at it right now because I just did it. I have like sticky notes where I've cataloged the individual like moments of my labor experience. So like when labor started all the way to when my son was born. And I've some sticky notes have nothing on them because they're like neutral. It's just kind of like a marker of something that happened. Some have flowers and some have stones. And the amazing thing about this, and I was not intentionally doing this, but there are just as many flowers as there are stones. It's like, it's completely equal. I think there's about 16 of each. And then there's, you know, a handful of sticky notes without anything. And, yeah, that really speaks to what I've been talking about for, I think what like the biggest theme was of my pregnancy and birth, it was like duality. If you've been following me on Instagram over there, you'll have seen a lot of conversation on my feed about duality and holding space for duality, and that things don't have to be all good or all bad. We can recognize both and hold space for both. And so yeah, I just did this ritual. I gathered flowers from my garden and stones from my garden too, actually. So all of these things are gathered from a space that I lovingly care for, from my happy place. I sat down on the floor of my office. I put on some music, lit my candle. I very rarely use this, but my uncle Heoka, who was a shaman, he passed away on January 11th, 1/11/2021, like just a couple days after I found out I was pregnant. He passed away at 80 years old. He was amazing. And he initiated me into various teachings. I did a vision quest through him. We have Native American ancestry. He was like living with actually a couple different tribes. He was a sun dancer over the course of his life, and he went back to those roots in our ancestry, and was a shaman. He was really impactful as an elder in multiple communities. And he gave me braided sweetgrass, which is so sacred, and it's not something that I use lightly. And I wouldn't use it if it was not something that had been given to me by an elder who had gone through like very specific practices with very specific communities. And and I also have an eagle feather that has a beaded, like, for lack of a better word, handle. It's like the, you know, end of the feather has beads around it, hand beaded, and my sweetgrass. So I really reserve this for very special things. I think the last time I burned that sweetgrass was when I did a ceremony for Heoka's passing. And so all that is to say, I used my sweetgrass for this ritual, for the smoke cleansing properties of that. Cleansed me, cleansed my space. I gathered my stones, I gathered my flowers, the flowers that I grew myself. And I sat down with, we had a birth photographer. And so I sat down with the photos of the birth and went chronologically from beginning to end, and put down a flower in the moments of beauty and put down a stone in the moments that felt challenging. I want to backtrack a little bit. So just to give some perspective of the importance of this ritual for me, I mentioned this a few minutes ago. I was diagnosed with PTSD. And so what happened in my birth was that I had a planned home birth. I did my due diligence to find a birthing team. I had a team of three midwives that all worked together. So I had three midwives. I had my husband. My husband and I did our hypnobirthing class together. I watched so many birth videos and educated myself. And, I come from this background of loving and trusting my body and being a move, I've been a dancer, so I'm really in tune with my body, and through being a yoga teacher, very conscious of my alignment. And I really from as long as I can remember, being a teenager, I was so excited for birth and just had this feeling of this is my biggest pinnacle of motherhood, of womanhood. This is my birthright as a woman. I want to do it naturally. I'm going to do it naturally. I really had no space, no room for anything other than this idealized version of birth that felt natural and primal. Which, a lot of people have. So the natural birth community talks about how intervention is way overdone, and how, women are traumatized in their births because there is no consent in the doctors, the hospitals, and how even home births can be a place of trauma because the midwives aren't practicing trauma-informed care or informed consent. And it's really it's so complex. I think, I was just talking to Sam about this the other day. I think there's something in birth that comes up where people are brought into this really primal space. And I honestly feel even those who are trained professionals enter this alternate consciousness, and it's everyone's on a drug trip. I feel nobody was operating in a way that was lucid. And that might just be my perspective of it. But even talking to my midwives and debriefing the experience and talking to the hospital, people are saying that things happened that didn't, because we have evidence of things, and people are misremembering things. And, it just is wild to me. And I think because of that, and this is totally my opinion, people might feel differently, but this was my experience. Maybe it was just the experience I was meant to have, but because everybody was all operating in this weird alternate drug trip consciousness, it meant that a lot of things fell to the side that I really wanted to prioritize. And my home birth I labored for over 60 hours. I was fully dilated for 12 hours. I pushed for 6 hours. And if you are not familiar, average births are under 24 hours. And in hospital, they don't even allow you to push for more than 2 hours. And as soon as you're fully dilated, they really want you to start pushing. So for me to be fully dilated for 12 hours, to push for 6 hours, might have been pushing for longer, honestly, and to be in labor for that long is pretty abnormal. And on top of that, I had back labor, which is from what I hear from other people who've gone through back labor and not had back labor. Back labor is 10 times more painful than normal labor because you have your contraction and then your back spasm. So it was literally I would have the contraction, which was painful for sure. But the back spasm, if you've ever had a back spasm, your whole body just seizes up. And so as I was in these contractions, trying to soften and relax and allow Leo to descend, my whole body would just seize. And so because of all of these things, these factors, and I'm going to talk more about the actual birth story, but that's to just give you an idea of I had a difficult birth and I was not prepared for that because I had in my mind that natural birth is my birthright. And I've prepared, I've done everything. I have a 6-page document of all of the birth tools I want to use. That includes the affirmations, the essential oils, the breathing practices, all of it, the positions. I wanted to do spinning babies, all of these things.
I had my team of three midwives, and I had Sam, who, you know, we did our birth class together, and I felt like, you know, I prepared him as much as I could on my part. And yeah, it still went into a really dark place, even though I did so much to protect that experience for myself because I wanted it so badly. And since going through that experience, I've heard so many women share stories that are similar but feel differently. So I've heard a lot of women who have had traumatic births, and I totally relate to them. And I've also heard women who've had experiences like mine, very similar, where like they plan a home birth, there's a transfer, or they want a natural birth and there's an intervention, but they're like, it was still the most beautiful experience of my life and I'm so grateful it happened. And like, you know, meanwhile, I'm like, I've been struggling like with more depression and shame than I've ever felt in my life. At the core of it, it's like, this wasn't supposed to be my story. Like, who am I to like go out into the world with my values and morals and ideologies than carrying this experience to me, which was like, I failed myself. I failed my body and I failed my baby. Like, those are the inner feelings. And rationally, I can say, no, I didn't fail. Obviously, I have a healthy baby. And obviously, I'm so grateful. Like, there's no getting around the fact that, like, I'm so grateful for a healthy baby. And, like, obviously, the birth outcome was positive because Leo was, like, perfect. And I came out healthy. And my recovery was easy. And breastfeeding was, like, literally, I've not had a single problem with breastfeeding. It's been the easy thing. So it's I hold a lot of judgment towards myself for, like, why am I not just in this gratitude for all of my blessings? And I have friends who've had much more challenging outcomes of birth, like devastating, beyond, like unimaginable. And, you know, I think it's this thing in our culture where we're like, oh, well, because other people have it worse, we can't be upset. When in fact, like, everything is relative, and our trauma might not seem like logical to somebody else, but for us, it's real, and we don't really have a choice in what traumatizes us, because trauma not only occurs from what happens in that moment, but what it triggers of, you know, previous experiences and lived experiences too, like from our childhood. So I've been unpacking all of that over the last year of like, why, not only like what happened in my birth that like led to the transfer, that led to me feeling like I was coerced into something, but also why is it that I'm feeling this way? And I think there's a lot of really valid reasons. There's a lot of reasons that are just because of the birth culture that we live in that like really does not honor women and is not trauma-informed at all. And then there are reasons that are personal to my lived experience. So this is a lot. You know, I wake up thinking about my birth. And I can't tell you how many sleepless nights I've had on top of not sleeping as a new mom. The way that my birth experience impacted my sense of self is like, shocking to me, and I'm the one experiencing it, and I would imagine would be shocking to others, though I don't want to presume anything. So I want to go through a little bit of my birth story. I guess I want to go through my birth story from start to finish with you to share what happened as a way, honestly, not only for me to share, because I know like people have interest in hearing birth stories. And though I talk about the trauma I experienced, I don't think this is like, would be that traumatic, like in re-sharing. Like I don't necessarily feel like hearing it is going to make anybody, I'm hoping, feel like they're traumatized. Like I don't think in the listening to it, unless you've had a challenging birth yourself, this might be triggering, but it's not like gory or gruesome. There's no like major moments of loss. So I just want to preface that by saying like, though I experienced a lot of trauma in my experience of this birth, I don't think hearing it is going to be like a really, really challenging thing to hear. Though that is my guess. I don't know. I will say, like, trigger warning for if you've experienced sexual assault, that's definitely a trigger warning, or any kind of, like, violation of your bodily autonomy. And, like, trigger warning if you have also experienced a challenging birth, though I have found actually listening to other birth stories where they didn't go according to plan has been really helpful to make me feel, like, not alone, because one of the faults of the natural birth community is they tell you to only listen to positive stories. And then if you have a birth that isn't positive, you're like, oh my God, something's wrong with me. When in fact, like, the majority of births don't go according to plan. And like one out of every four births end up with intervention that isn't planned. And like one out of every four home births ends up in the hospital. And that was not like in my consciousness. So yeah. Okay. In my pregnancy, I experienced perinatal anxiety and depression. And, you know, it was the pandemic. The vaccines weren't out yet. Everyone was operating under, like, not only fear of the virus, but also fear of the vaccine. Not everyone, I should say. There was just a lot of fear on every end of the spectrum. And, I felt really afraid for my little one, for sure. I felt really afraid of getting sick. And I had a lot of like OCD around food preparation so that I wouldn't get food poisoning. I was like so bubbled and protected because of the pandemic, which meant that, like, you know, I felt really isolated a lot of it. I intentionally isolated myself. And there was a lot of beautiful moments of my pregnancy. Like, I loved my belly. I loved being in my garden while pregnant. I loved feeling Leo move in my body and feeling that growth and feeling so connected to this growing spirit in my womb and what that meant for my relationship with Sam, you know. But it also was like from the beginning, like duality. It was beautiful and hard because of my perinatal mood disorder. And I feel like I've been able, I mean, it was of course hormone related, but I feel like I've been able to trace back that, and this was a recent revelation, that perinatal anxiety to actually witnessing my mom's miscarriage when I was 2 years old. And I don't have very many memories of it, but, you know, my mom, not only like my mom completely blamed herself for her miscarriages, and which like was so unfair to her. It makes me sad, you know, and also witnessing that very violent experience at a young age. Like I saw the blood, like I was there. I would imagine imprinted something in me about birth and responsibility, not only because I witnessed it, but because my mom blamed herself. And my mom got bronchitis like 2 weeks before I was born. And then I had meconium and she had a hard birth where she had to be induced and it was really stressful. And, you know, when I came into the world, like they immediately took me from my mom to like, cause the meconium is like stool that the baby has released into the amniotic fluid. And if it's inhaled, it can be really, really bad, like life-threatening. That did not happen to me, but they like still aspirated me out of caution, which is not a practice they do anymore. They only aspirate if it seems like it's absolutely necessary. But that was so traumatic for both of us, I would imagine. And I mean, I can't remember, but you know, my guess is that. And so, you know, I went into pregnancy thinking like, oh, if I get sick, there's going to be birth trauma. You know, if I lose the baby, it's my fault. And like, these are not conscious things that I was thinking, but in my healing process, I've come to like put two and two together. And that makes sense that those fears would be living within me because of my lived experience. So yeah, I went into birth feeling so excited, even though I had experienced perinatal anxiety and depression that was like very debilitating, that I saw like two therapists for, I felt like no fear about labor, no conscious fear about labor. I just was like, my body's going to do its thing. I'm preparing for every possible scenario. I have a team that's amazing. And here we go. So when I went into labor, it was on my wedding anniversary, and Sam had prepared, we have a music studio in our house, we're both musicians. Sam had recorded this lullaby that we had been singing to Leo his whole, throughout my whole pregnancy. Because if you sing into the womb, the baby will come out knowing that song, and it will like calm the baby because it'll remind them of being in the womb. So we were singing the song to him. I'll sing a little bit for you now so you can get the vibe. We're lying on the moon, my dear will be there soon. It's a dark and starry place. We're cuddled up in space and we're a million miles away. So it's called the Moon Song. We chose it because Leo was conceived on the winter solstice unintentionally. And I was tracking my cycle, so I knew. When I counted back, I was like, oh my gosh, it was the winter solstice. But yeah, and so we sang that song to him because, of course, he was conceived on the night where the moon is out longest, right? It's the longest night of the year. We named him Aurelio Sol, which means golden sun, because he is the sun in the night. Again, duality. And so I went into labor because Sam had recorded this lullaby and played it back for me. And I just felt Leo like nuzzle deep into my pelvis. And then I started feeling crampy. And this was like probably 8 p.m. on September 15th, our anniversary. And so I was feeling cramps throughout the night. Sorry if you can hear Leo in the other room crying. But I was feeling cramping throughout the night. And it woke me up a few times. And I woke up and I was like, I think this is it. Like we were basically at my due date. And yeah, I was like feeling basically these early contractions. So I had in my mind, I wanted to make muffins in early labor for myself and the birth team. And because I knew I was going to be in labor, I didn't want to like eat that much because it's like a workout. You know, like I was like eating some muffins and the morning was continuing and Sam woke up and I was like, I think this is it. And we had some friends coming over who also were like contractors. I don't know, like that feels like such an official title. One of them is a legit contractor. The other two were like helping him out. So we had some friends come over to do some work on the house that was needing to happen because we have a 1840s farmhouse. So it's always being renovated. We always have people coming and going, working on the house. So they happened to come that day. You know, which I thought like maybe we should cancel it, but I was like, well, they're our friends and, you know, like if things start to pick up, we can tell them to go and it's fine. So they were working on the house. I was making muffins and doing my thing. I was prepping the birth space. I was picking flowers in the garden and bringing them in. And for a while I was just hanging out in the garden, sunning my belly. And the contractions were continuing to become more regular and closer together. So like for each contraction, Sam was marking them and I'd be like, okay, it's another one. And okay, it ended. And Sam was marking it. And, you know, by like 3 p.m. that day, they'd gotten like 5 minutes apart, lasting longer than a minute each or something. I can't remember exactly, but it's the whatever point they tell you to call the midwives, it got to that point. But it still just felt kind of like menstrual cramps, like intense, like cramping. And it wasn't like I was like in super pain. But the midwives arrived because they were like at that regular interval. And then, you know, my like main midwife, she was like, listen, she like sat with us for a while, like hanging out while I was in my birth space or living room, like birthing. And she was like, listen, like you just seem like you're too comfortable. So let us know when it intensifies. So she actually left. Okay. So that was like maybe 3 p.m. ish. And then maybe it was a little later. I honestly can't remember, but it was the afternoon at latest. It was like 5 p.m. So, okay. Like things continued. I continued to labor. Sam and I like tried watching a movie. My contractions were starting to get more intense. And I would say by like 10 o'clock, they were like intense. They were full on contractions continuing at that regular interval. And, we called the midwives, all three of them came, and I was like, yeah, fully in labor, no back labor yet. And I had my vision board, I was doing my breathing, the cats were around, I was burning incense. My midwives, like, they, like, I'm not, I guess they wanted to, like, give us our space while also being there, but for most of my birth, they were, like, my dining room and living room are, like, connected. Like, it's kind of open concept for as much as that could be in the 1840s. And so they were in the dining room, like, on their laptops, like, working while Sam and I were, like, in labor land together in the living room, which, like, in retrospect is something that I expressed to them was, like, weird. But at the moment, like, I was kind of like, I don't know, is this normal? Like, I was in labor and I was just like, I guess they're doing their thing and we're doing our thing. What I think would have been helpful in retrospect was being like, oh, like, either you're in or you're out. You know, either you're in and you're supporting me and you're engaging with me, or you're, like, out of the room, because it was, like, weird and distracting. But yeah, so eventually we got the birth tub up, and I was like, once I got in the tub, I was like, this is amazing. Like, it was so relieving. It was so nice to be in hot water. Sam ended up getting in the birth tub with me. We have, my birth photographer had arrived by that point, and so we have some really sweet pictures of us while I'm laboring in the birth tub, and, you know, I'm smiling a lot of it, like, even though I'm in a lot of pain. It was around this point, so it was probably like 11 p.m. midnight, where the back labor started, and I noticed, like, when I was getting out of the tub, I was like, oh, like, I was not prepared for back labor. Back labor is apparently happens when the baby's not in the right position. To my knowledge, like, what the midwives were telling me, the baby's in perfect position, so I was not prepared for it. But, you know, I was like, it's fine, whatever, we'll keep going. Obviously, there's no way out but forward, and it'll be what it'll be. And so it progressed, you know, overnight. At a certain point, the back labor got so, so painful. And there's a procedure that the midwives could do where they injected fluid into my spine to try to kind of dull the pain. That was honestly the most painful of my entire birth, like, even pushing him out. Like, that was it. I've never been in more pain in my life than when they injected that spinal fluid. It didn't really do very much for me. And, you know, they tried to get me to, like, rest in bed, and I was, like, upstairs in bed. Sam was asleep. And I just felt alone. You know, my midwives were downstairs and they wanted me to get some sleep, I suppose, but, like, I couldn't, because I was having these, like, really painful contractions. And we were playing Harry Potter's audiobook, because I had, like, randomly heard in our birth class that, like, a woman was playing the Harry Potter audiobook while she was in labor to, like, distract her. And so that was, like, the only thing I could think of. And so I was, like, sleeping. We were not sleeping. Sam was sleeping. I was, like, listening to this and doing my best to, like, just stay positive. I should mention, too, like, when my midwives arrived, they checked for my dilation. I was only 1 centimeter dilated, even though I had been in, like, early labor for so long and, like, fully laboring, actually, for a few hours. And I was, you know, it took, my body was, like, taking a long time to dilate. So then morning came, I was in and out of the tub, I was in the shower, we walked in the garden in the morning, I was, like, moving around as much as I could. I couldn't keep food down, I couldn't keep water down, I just threw everything up, everything that I had. I was feeling so tired. I remember there was, like, a period, maybe an hour or two, where I was in the tub and Sam was, like, sleeping on the floor in the living room, and I just was like, the back labor was just getting in the way. Like, I felt like it was getting in the way. I would, like, be in, like, this position, like this squat with my knees on the bottom of the tub for the contraction. But then halfway through the contraction, a back spasm would start and I'd have to, like, round my spine, which is actually, like, not the position I felt like was most conducive to allowing Leo to descend further through the birth canal. And it really felt like a push and pull. And I had this thought of, like, you know, because I was in pain, I was tired, I'd already been in labor for, you know, I'd been in labor for, like, over a day. If you count early labor, I'd been in, like, active labor for at least, like, 14 hours. And I had this thought of, like, you know, I'm going to get through this, time is going to pass, and I just have to be here now but eventually this will be a memory. Like, I just had, that's like the thought that comforted me, was like, eventually this will be a memory. And so I was just moving through it. And then, you know, I was progressing, dilating. My midwife actually like manually stretched my cervix to try to get my dilation to progress, which in retrospect, like, is not something I wish I didn't consent to that, and that I like tried different positions instead. Because if my birth tool plan, like I had my document I mentioned, where I had all these birth tools that like wasn't used. Like, I pointed it out to the midwives, I gave it to Sam, and Sam used some of it, but not all of it. And, you know, I was in labor land, so I was like not really thinking on things other than like my pain and my experience and my body, and my birth tools weren't used, which is like something that I really carry a lot of grief about, because in retrospect, you know, I really wish they had been used, obviously. Otherwise, I wouldn't have prepared them. But, you know, all of that's in retrospect. And I had that manual dilation. It was taking a long time. By this point, you know, I had been in heavy labor for a while, and my midwife suggested going backwards on the toilet, which is something I had in my mind, like, is something I should do, because dilation was taking a while. Like, I knew that that was a really good trick, but there was a lot of things that passed through my mind in labor that I didn't voice. And, you know, I feel like it's that kind of thing where, like, if you've been on hallucinogens or like, I don't know, it's this experience where, like, you know what you're supposed to, or you know what you want to say or what you want to do, but like actually saying or doing it feels like you can't. And so I couldn't really, I also just felt like it took too much effort to like say what I wanted to say or do these things. If somebody told me to do something, I would do it. But like getting up the effort and motivation to do something myself was really hard in labor, I would say, because I was in a lot of pain and I was tired. I hadn't slept like a full night's sleep in days at that point. I couldn't keep food or water down. I was super dehydrated and undernourished. And so I do try to hold a lot of grace for myself for that. But yeah, I really anticipated that in labor, I would be way more of an advocate for myself. But that's why I preemptively created this document. And I also had my birth plan document in place in case of a hospital transfer. And I did have a hospital bag ready, out of like hoping that I wouldn't need it, just also to organize all my postpartum things. But okay, so going back to the story. So I went backwards on the toilet. I'd been in heavy labor for 24 hours at that point. And I started to sing. We called my grandmother, and I had had this experience in high school where I was in a really, really bad car accident. Like, they told me I wouldn't walk again. That's another story for another day. In my initial like surgery, I wasn't put under, and they were like, I don't want to get into the gory details. That was super painful. I was on a heavy dose of pain medication, but still feeling everything in the hospital at 15 years old. And I just sang my way through the pain. Like, my grandmother was there. My other grandmother, I have two grandmothers. One of my grandmothers, my mom's mom, was there and had to leave because it was like too brutal for her to watch. My dad was like in the corner in tears. And my grandmother, Dealey, who I'm talking about, I was on the phone with during birth. She came in and she was like, I mean, she's like fierce. She was like, okay, Melanie, I want you to sing. You know, and like she sat with me. Same thing happened in labor when we called her. She told me to start singing. I started singing Disney songs because, like, you know, at that point, like, those are like words that are engraved on my heart. And like, you know, I've been singing these songs my whole life, so they're the easiest songs for me to access. So I was singing Disney princess songs, which felt amazing. And actually, I felt so much relief. My contractions stopped being as painful, and I started feeling Leo like descend. And it was almost like this like vision of like, oh my God, like, I'm going to sing him out. Like, I felt so close. And I think because I said, I'm feeling him descend, I'm feeling him get lower, my midwives were downstairs. One of them came up and was like, it sounds like you're pushing. And I was like, well, I don't know if I'm pushing, but I'm feeling him drop down. She's like, well, why don't we do some coached pushing, which is when they like basically tell you, okay, push now with each contraction. And you're like manually pushing rather than allowing your body to push for you, which like most births, if like they're uninterrupted and there's no intervention, like the body will naturally get into this point where it's like you can't help but push, like your body pushes for you. But coach pushing is when you like are actually doing the like work yourself to push. It's the best way I can describe it. So I was like, well, I'd been in labor for a long time by that point, almost 2 whole days counting early labor. And I was like, yep, I'm ready to get this baby out. Let's meet him. Even though I wanted no coach pushing, that was on my birth plan, suggested to me in that moment of like, you've been in pain, you can get out of this sooner. I was like, yeah, sign me up. But that was the moment where things changed, because we went downstairs, because my bathroom where I was sitting on backwards on the toilet was upstairs. We went downstairs. I kept singing with the pushes, but then eventually my midwife said, it's time to get serious, do some serious pushing, stop singing. And I tried, you know, I pushed, and they were telling me, you're not making the right noises. I was trying all these different positions. I was trying all these different like guttural noises. For some reason, there was a fixation on that. At a certain point, you know, like she was, my amniotic sac hadn't popped. So my water never broke. And some babies are born with their amniotic sac around them, which is something I thought was so cool. Cause it's like traditionally like this beautiful good luck, like it's mystical. There's a lot of mysticism around babies born on call. It's like ENCAUL. That's like the term. And so I'd always wanted that. And I'm like, oh my God, my baby's going to be born on call. Like, it's so cool. And, but she was like, you know, I think your bag is getting in the way, like the amniotic bag, is getting in the way. And she like asked me if she could pop it. And I was like, no, I don't want that. But then, you know, I'd been pushing for like 3 hours, which was a lot longer than like average, you know, and seemingly making no progress, even though I was trying different positions. I still had no urge to push. So I was doing it all myself. And, you know, she basically was like, I think if we pop your bag, that the baby will just come out easily. I think that's what's getting in your way. So I agreed to it, even though it felt really dissonant with my desires. One of the things that I really like had put in my plan for birth was like, please ask my intuition. But nobody asked my intuition, you know, and that's something that like my midwives and husband like have apologized for, because they were not thinking of that. They were thinking of, you know, the risks and the fears and, you know, which are like valid. But, you know, there were a lot of times where I heard my intuition, but again, like I couldn't actually formulate the words and was being presented with a lot of fearful information that I had a difficulty meeting, you know, in that moment. Of course, like, when you know you've gotten to a point in labor where it's going longer than average and the risks are what they are, it's scary. You know, my midwives were already starting to be like, we might have to transfer to the hospital. And that in and of itself was like gut-wrenching for me, just that it was like a threat. And so operating from that place, like, it makes sense that I would start to feel really small and start to feel like coerced. So she popped the bag. I kept pushing. The back labor was so intense. Like, I would feel Leo start to make progress and then my back would seize up. It was literally a push and pull. And then my midwife reached up to like feel Leo, and she's like, oh, I feel something that I didn't realize was there. She's like, your baby's head is swelling, which hearing that sounds so scary. It's called caput, when the baby's head starts to swell, and it's actually pretty normal. It happens in 25% of pregnancies. It's not harmful to the baby. It's not actually a big deal. What it is it does tell you that the baby has been in one position for a long time, which that can be, you know, a risk factor. It shows you that the baby's not making progress. And for me, having been pushing it like for 4 hours at that point with the baby not making progress, my midwife felt like there was a lot of risks, you know, and like statistically, yeah, the risks were higher of hemorrhaging, of something happening to the baby. And, you know, there's a lot of things. But hearing like your baby's head is swelling without me having that knowledge of what Caput was, like I'd never heard of that, I was like beside myself with fear. So when she said, you know, I suggest going to the hospital, I agreed. And I felt like such a failure. I felt like, you know, I mean, I prepared my hospital bag, but I was like, well, at least I have my birth plan. And so I handed my birth plan document to Sam and he handed it to our midwife. And we went out and we went in the car. Sam's mom, my mother-in-law, had to drive us to the hospital because Sam was so sleep deprived too. He had barely been sleeping for days while I was in labor. And he could not, like, he was like so like out of it. He couldn't drive. So his mom came and picked us up, drove to the hospital. On the way to the hospital, we almost got in a car accident, probably because like she was driving fast, but like somebody like swerved in front of us. And when that happened, I felt the baby release meconium, which means the baby is stressed. And I'm sure it's because I like gasped and had this moment of like fear of like we're in a car accident, which I already expressed like my lived experience of being in a really bad car accident. So like I, you know, trauma on top of trauma. And so when we got to the hospital, sure enough, there was meconium in the fluid. There wasn't before. So I knew it happened in the car. I felt when it happened. And I was like, if we're going to the hospital, I'm getting an epidural. Like, F this. Like, I'm ready to be out of pain. If I'm going to get intervention, I'm going to get the pain relief. So, you know, it took a few hours of me just like, again, just still laboring and having no urge to push. Like, you know, I don't know what was happening in my body at that point. My contractions were really short. Like they were just, I think my body was exhausted. I was dehydrated. And so, yeah, I got the epidural and then it was like the heavens opened and I was like, oh my God, I feel like I can talk again. Like I was actually able to communicate. My midwife said she communicated the birth plan. So I was like, great, whatever, you know, let's keep going. So I slept for like 30 minutes and then the hospital, like the nurse came in and was like, it's time to push again. So I started pushing and the OBGYN was like, so, you know, we recognize you haven't been making progress at home. If we don't see progress being made, we are going to recommend a C-section. And I should mention too, like in the car, like I really was like, I don't care if I die or the baby dies. Like I was in a really dark place, which is very normal at that point in labor. You know, I was like, I'm done with everything. you know, and I'm laughing because obviously it's like terrible. But in retrospect, it makes sense. Yeah. So it was dark moments for me in there. But once I got the epidural, I felt like capable of moving forward again. And then we started pushing and I was making progress. I was like, I know I can do this if we just get the back labor under control. I like that was in my mind is like getting in the way, which like it's so possible it was. You know, I think I have a lot of different theories as to why things happened the way they did, but like the back labor definitely like got in my way mentally for sure because I was not anticipating it and I felt like I wasn't able to relax physically because my whole body was seizing up. And so, you know, the epidural made it so the back labor stopped. And I pushed for 2 more hours in the hospital, so it wasn't like he flew out, but it was a lot easier than before. I put on my music. I put on like belly dancing music. My midwife brought in a mirror like to go in front of my leg. So I watched Leo's head like come out of my body. I could see myself making progress, which was like amazing. Like that was, I loved that. I loved that so much. And then they were like, well, because there's meconium, we need the NICU team here. They're going to be in the corner. So as soon as like he was crowning, like getting close to crowning, like 20 people came in the room. And then the OBGYN and nurse, it had been like my midwife, OBGYN and nurse. And Sam was like sleeping during most of that. But like it had been 3 women around me while I was pushing until the very end. And then suddenly it was like 20 people came in, which I was aware they were. But then it was like a different person in front of me who was going to catch Leo that like I hadn't that hadn't been communicated to me. It turns out, like, it's a teaching hospital, and so it was like somebody who was like doing their residency, like essentially training, and I had no students written on my birth plan. And so, you know, I didn't really know what was going on, but like there was a different person at my feet than there was previously. I made it known that I wanted to catch Leo. So, you know, he crowned, and then like his head emerged, and I thought like, okay, so I wanted to do what is like very natural in birth, which is two-stage pushing, where you push out the head and then you wait for the next contraction to push out the body. When you have an epidural, I guess they don't let you do that. I mean, they don't want you to do that in hospital anyway, because they feel like there's more risks with it, even though it's the more natural way of doing things. But I thought that was happening, but then two people reached into my body to pull Leo out in that one contraction. And I literally said, okay, so we wait for the next contraction, and then I finish pushing him out. Nobody said anything. My midwife said nothing. Honestly, devastating to me that like she didn't advocate for me. And four hands reached into my body to pull Leo out when I like had no idea that that was happening. Under any other circumstance, that would be considered assault, you know, like for me to say like, okay, we're waiting for nobody to say anything and then literally reach inside my body. Like I think was like such a huge part of my trauma. There was the stuff at home where I felt really coerced into like going against like what my body and what my heart wanted, you know, with like the fear stuff that my midwife was bringing up. But then also, like, yeah, the hospital staff, you know, just no consent. None. Okay. But, of course, I'm like, duality, here we are. Leo's being born. And as soon as I realized that they were, like, not doing the two-stage pushing, I reached down and I pulled him up and brought him onto my chest. And I said, you're here and we love you. And I will never forget, like, the surrealest moment of my life was seeing his face for the first time, and it's like this stranger but also not. And Sam and I started singing to him, and I wanted delayed cord clamping, which is where they wait to cut the umbilical cord to let more of the blood go back from the placenta into the baby. They clamped the cord and then said, okay, Dad, time to cut the cord. And I heard this and I was like, wait, no, we're doing delayed cord clamping. Like, this was like within the minute after Leo was born. And they were like, what? My midwife said nothing. Like, that's her job. That's her job in the hospital, is to advocate for my birth plan. She said nothing. And I was like, okay, well, I want 10 minutes. And they were like, you can't do 10 minutes. Like, what? It's my body. But they said, you can't do 10 minutes. I had just given birth, literally, like, within the last couple minutes. I had the baby. I didn't want to be arguing, like, for the first words he was hearing. I wanted to focus on him. I didn't want to be, like, arguing with the hospital. So I said, okay, I need at least 3 minutes, which, like, yeah, most of the blood does go back when that 3 minutes. I had that in my mind. And they said, okay. And who knows if they actually unclamped the cord. I don't know. I hope they did. There's no way I'll know, because I wasn't focusing on that. I was focusing on the baby. My midwife did nothing. And she, you know, in our debriefing of the birth, like, was in tears. She had her own trauma days before my birth, or like the day I went into labor. And she even expressed, like, her family or friends said, like, are you sure you want to go to that birth? But she wanted to show up anyway. But clearly, like, she was not in a place to be at my birth, because in her words, like, she was not, quote, on her A game. But yeah, she wasn't able to do her job. And that is not something that I ever thought would happen. I hope they did the delayed cord clamping. A few minutes later, they were like, okay, like, we're gonna clamp the cord now and deliver the placenta. And I was just like, I don't want to be like fighting with the hospital staff right now. I need to be focusing on my baby. And that was the choice I made in that moment, you know, like, yes, could I have advocated more for myself? Absolutely. Did I expect my midwife to be advocating for me? Yes. She couldn't, obviously, because she didn't. And Sam was like, no, he was in like such a state where he also couldn't advocate. Like, he was scared. He was out of his mind, tired. And my birth plan, like the printed document that I handed to Sam and Sam handed to the midwife, stayed in my bag. So my midwife verbally communicated and like sent over the document or like a variation of it on our way to the hospital. Nobody read it in the hospital team. Whoever she communicated the birth plan to didn't communicate it to other people. And my actual birth plan that I printed out stayed in the bottom of my bag. When we got back from the hospital, it was crumpled in the bottom of my bag. Like nobody used it. And like, ugh, it's gut-wrenching, you know, because these are what I'm consenting to with in regards to my body. And for seemingly nobody to care, it's beyond comprehension. You know, in birth, there's this idea of like, oh, as long as the mom and the baby are okay, that's what matters most. But like, women are coming out of birth feeling traumatized because people are doing things to their body that they think are medically necessary. But there was time to communicate all of these things and have these discussions. There, in my birth, there was absolutely time. There was time where I asked and nobody answered. And it's because in our birth culture, in the medical community, it's like, oh, the doctors know best. But birth is so, so wild because unlike other medical events, the mother also knows best. Like, I still believe that. And there needs to be informed consent. So like, informed consent wasn't practiced in my birth when my midwife suggested we do coached pushing. I had no idea that that meant there was a time limit on my pushing, or, you know, that that meant like a higher likelihood of a hospital transfer. Both things were true. And had she, you know, informed me of those things, like informed consent means you're given the information. If she had informed me of those things, I might've made a different choice, you know? So informed consent was not practiced in my birth, and I came out feeling violated and coerced. And I really thought, like, me of all people would be able to prevent that. I thought I knew that those were the risks of giving birth in our society. But I thought, oh, I'm checking all the boxes. The natural birth community says, like, oh, well, if anything other than what you want happens in your birth, it's your fault. Like, that is the message. So I came out blaming myself, and I've done so much work to try to like unpack that. But, cause it's harmful, cause there are so much that is beyond our control in birth. And it's obviously so complicated, and the risks are there. And like, no, it would not be worth risking my baby's life to have a home birth. Like, no, of course not. So I do think that there is a world in which I could have had a home birth if like informed consent had been practiced. There's also a world in which it never would have happened. Like, it's possible even if like informed consent happened, even if my tools were used, it still wouldn't have happened, and we still would have ended up in the hospital. But like, if informed consent had been practiced in the hospital and communication had happened, even if my birth plan couldn't be honored, if it had been communicated to me as to why, you know, if I had time to be like, okay, I understand, I don't think I would have come out feeling the way that I felt. Which feeling the way I felt is like, I mean, I, again, like, as I've said, it's like altered, like shifted my sense of self and identity. It's made it so that like, I'm going through life with like all of this shame and guilt and blame. And I've been working so hard to move through. I've done so much therapy. I've done so much spiritual processing. I've done so much. And still it's like lingering. It's rough, you know? And I think this is because there's like other traumas it brought up, which is like the shadow work. And like the experience itself was also traumatic. I mean, I really thought like, I thought like there was a chance my baby and I were going to die. You know, so I really want to just go back really quick to the end of that story, which was like, yeah, my placenta was delivered sooner than I wanted it to be in a way I didn't want it to be, but I was focused on my son, and he was perfect. He's beautiful. He is like the biggest blessing. He just is everything. And was it worth it to get him? Absolutely. Do I wish it happened differently? Yes. But as I said, in doing this ritual that I did with the flowers and stones, there was so many hard moments, but so many beautiful moments. So, you know, I've shared kind of like the bullet points that have been somewhat negative in retelling this. which is something that I recognize within myself. Like, that's like, those are the moments of, like, I guess where the story takes its turns, and those are like the really identifiable moments of like clocking what's happening in the story. But I do want to share some of the beautiful moments. So, you know, there was a moment in the hospital when I was pushing where I was like blessing Leo. I was like telling him how loved he was. Basically, like, I was showering him with my words of love, like trying to make him feel safe to come out. I was like, the world is waiting for you. You have so many people ready to love you. As I was pushing, I was like, I'm waiting for him to emerge. And I was just telling him how loved he was and how excited we were to meet him. And that was a really beautiful moment. And again, like playing my music, was something I was really proud of myself for doing. You know, singing was like my favorite part of labor. You know, it was just amazing to find my voice and to feel the power of song in that moment. And then, yeah, seeing Leo's head emerge is wild and beautiful. It's a lot. A lot of my processing of this experience has been, as I said earlier, it's like, this wasn't supposed to be my story. Like, I was supposed to have the dreamy natural home birth. I was supposed to, like, you know, feel like I'm this like manifestation of the goddess. And I felt abandoned by the goddess after my birth. I felt like, you know, me, I'm like a moon mother, like womb wisdom, womanhood magic. And I was like, that's not how I felt in birth, or like that's not how I felt about my birth experience. Something felt broken. I've parsed this out to like the shame that's in the birth community, the immense responsibility put on the mom when it's like impossible to shoulder all of that responsibility. These unforeseen circumstances of my midwife having her own trauma and not being able to do her job effectively, which, like, yeah, we had to do a lot of reparations for, and she willingly was like admitting to the fact that, like, you know, she messed up. And Sam and I have done a lot of work together to like parse out like the responsibility that he held and I held in our birth, and how he wasn't advocating for me and why. And I've had to do a lot of the work of forgiveness, you know, for him, for my body, for the midwives, for the hospital staff. I'm really trying to anchor into the idea that this birth was meant for me, that it was meant to be part of my story, even though it's not what I envisioned or wanted, because of all of the gifts that processing this has brought me. And like, yes, obviously Leo is enough of a gift. I feel like I, you know, have that voice in my head that's like, you should just be grateful. Like, stop making a big deal. Your baby is healthy and perfect. That should be enough. I wish that I was able to come out of birth feeling that way. I know a lot of women are. I feel like, honestly, my experience of labor and the experience of having a baby are like separate things in my mind, which maybe is not helpful, but like there was the experience of labor that I wanted, and then the experience of having, like, actually having the baby, and the experience of, like, I had the baby like in my arms, like, beautiful, wonderful, so grateful. The experience of labor was like unimaginably challenging, like so much more than I ever could have imagined. And like, I was trying to prevent against things happening that did happen. Like, actively, I thought I actively prevented against those things, yet they happened anyway. Some of this, I think, is inevitable because of birth culture. And some of it was, like, in Sam's word, an act of God. Like, there's no way we could have foreseen that my midwife would have had her own trauma experience the day I went into labor. And there's no way we knew about back labor. And, like, there's a lot of things that I think, you know, contributed to that experience in my, like, from me. Like, there are ways in which, like, yes, I need to fully learn how to advocate for myself. I thought I already did, but there's some really deeply ingrained fawn behavior. Like, you know, we talk about fight or flight, freeze. There's also the fawn response to trauma, which is like trying to please the people involved. And I know that's my trauma response. And so, you know, agreeing to whatever the midwives told me to do was my fawn response, even if it went against what I wanted. So that shows me I have a lot of trauma left to heal. And also I have a lot of trauma left to heal around like my relationship with my mom and her birth experiences. And there's a lot of other things too that I don't really feel like the capacity, like I don't think it's necessary for me to go into about my personal lived experience, but there's other traumas too that have really come up that I just was like, whoa, like I wouldn't have access to those memories or that knowledge about myself if I wasn't processing this birth. And I can see the benefit of that for Leo, like for my son, because he's gonna have a mom who's more healed, who's able to have a more integrated shadow, who's acting with more self-awareness, which is like better for everyone. That wouldn't have happened it wouldn't have happened as quickly. Maybe it wouldn't have happened this way if I hadn't gone through that experience. One of the things that I tell people when I'm coaching them or in my community is like, how can we transform the mindset from this happened to me to this is happening for me? This is happening for me. What can I learn from this? I say this in my course, like if we can find purpose in pain, we get through everything. And for a long time, I couldn't find the purpose in this experience. I mean, obviously the purpose is having a baby, but like, you know, there was a lot more to it than that. And I was like, why can't I find the purpose in this? Why can't I find the purpose? And to be honest, I see like some of the purposes. Okay, like, yes, doing this shadow work that was like so necessary that I had no idea was there. I had no idea the depth my shadow went. And I think there's more. And I'm hoping some of it is sharing this. And I feel so vulnerable sharing this. I hear my own inner judgment that is like, oh, like Melanie, like your experience could have been so much worse. You should just be grateful. But I'm sure that there's something that you've experienced too, where you think that about yourself, or maybe you hold that judgment about other people. And is there a way we can release that judgment to just be like, you know what? We all have hardships of varying degrees. Doesn't mean it's not hard for that person. Because often, even if it doesn't seem like it's hard, like on paper, there might be deeper traumas that are coming up that are making it harder, which is definitely the case for my birth experience trauma. I feel really proud of the space I created at home and even in the hospital. It was almost like though there were things and people doing things around me that were dissonant to the experience I wanted to create for myself and my son and my family, I think I still did a really good job of holding my space as best as I could under these immensely hard circumstances. Also to go like 60 hours of labor without pain medicine, you know, I got it in the last like 3 hours. I had an epidural for the last, I don't know, 2.5 hours, maybe even. I think it was under 3 hours. I had an epidural for the last 2.5 hours of over 60 hours of labor. It's pretty badass. Not that like I was trying to, you know, get an award for most painful labor. Certainly not. I like would joke before my birth. I was like, oh, I hope I accidentally have a free birth where it happens so fast the midwives don't even arrive in time. Obviously, that's not what happened. I don't know what this will look like moving forward, but I really feel grateful that you've listened to my story. And if there's any trauma challenges that you've gone through that don't make sense to you, that feel like this wasn't meant to be part of my story, I feel you. and my hope too is that we can all find purpose in our pain and we can all find meaning in the mystery that is life. Thank you so much for listening. I think moving forward with this podcast, there's going to be a lot of fun things. Literally, as I'm recording this podcast, my assistant Liz is in labor. And I am waiting with bated breath to hear about the birth of her daughter. I hope that she comes out of it feeling a lot more empowered than I did. And I'm pretty sure that she will. And my hope is that by sharing my story, you know, with you, any of you moms feel less shame about your birth or feel more prepared for birth or feel empowered. I hope there's some positive effect for you. And if there is, please share it with me. You know, that is like anytime I share something vulnerable and I hear back that it's helped somebody, I can't tell you what a difference it makes for me. And I'm not sharing this to like get pity. I'm not sharing this to hear congratulations. That is not why I'm sharing this. I'm sharing this really for my own process. But if you have something that you wish to share with me, I would love to hear it too. And if you're struggling to process your own trauma, I recommend the Flowers and Stones. So I'm going to post about it on Instagram so you'll be able to find it there. If you can't find it there, send me a message and I'll share more about it with you. But my Instagram is at the Self Love Lifestyle. So you can find me there. And I'm going to share more about motherhood. You know, this was obviously about my birth experience. There's been so much since then. It's been a year. It does feel like my birth experience has been this like shadow or like cloud over a lot of my postpartum and early motherhood, but also there's been so much more than just that. So, I'm really excited to share the ways in which I'm consciously parenting, share more about my son Aurelio, and, just share more with you in general. Thank you so much for listening. And if you need anything, you know where to find me. Thank you so much for listening today. I do really appreciate it. And if you want to connect further, you can find me on Instagram at The Self Love Lifestyle, on Facebook at The Self Love Lifestyle. You can go to theselflovelifestyle.com to learn more about my offerings and the Self Love Coach Certification Program. And if you feel called, you can rate and review this podcast. That will help more people find it, which does grow our community. So if it feels aligned, I would be so grateful. Otherwise, I'll see you next time. And again, I just want to offer so much gratitude your way for listening today.